and welcome to the D1 Softball Podcast. I am your host, Tara Henry, joined by Rhiannon Potke. As always, we are excited to bring you the best of the best in college softball. After the show, head on over to d1softball.com for all the latest news, scores, stories, and more. If you just subscribe today, you can use Podcast 20. That's Podcast 20 for 20% off an annual subscription. We are super excited for today's new episode that features Jerry Glasgow from Louisiana. We are just getting into the middle, if not end of fall ball. I can't believe it. Ree, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing good. We got a lot of softball news, which is always a good thing, you know, keeping softball in the spotlight in the off season. We got all these fall reports. It's been really energizing to speak with all these coaches and hear how things are going. So yeah, it's been good stuff.
Big news this week. Oklahoma softball announced that Loves will be travel stop. Thanks, Ree. And we'll be donating $9 million to Oklahoma softball. Also challenging future donors. They'll match dollar for dollar for another $3 million. So potentially $12 million for OU, and it will be, if and when it's fulfilled, it'll be the largest donation for a female specific sport at OU athletics.
Love to see it. Invest in women, baby. This is awesome. It's long overdue for Oklahoma. That stadium regularly is packed to the gills, even as we see in fall ball. So they need to upgrade, and it'll come just in time for going to the SEC, where almost every other schools has a huge stadium. So it is, I just love to see a thing like Loves investing in women's sports, because people are starting to realize it's not out of charity. It's actually a really good investment, and the women deserve it. So I'm, like I said, long, long overdue, and I was really happy to see that released. We kind of knew it was coming maybe in the pipeline, but it was good to officially see it happen.
And I actually traveled out to OU the fall of 2019, so a couple years ago, and Patty was talking about, you know, how they were trying to get a new field and looking for funds. And, you know, she was super excited about it then, and to see it all come to fruition and see some renderings, it's just going to be amazing. And it's slated for 2024, when the Sooners are supposed to be starting their SEC conference in the SEC conference. So that'll be interesting as well. They'll be going toe to toe in terms of stadiums as well.
Yeah, and you can bet there'll be some SEC teams that'll be like, see, we need to upgrade now. Let's go. Let's get on it. We got all this new money, so we need ourselves. So we'll have the facility wars taking place again in the SEC once they enter and see that gem of a stadium. So, yeah, good stuff. I'm really excited about that. You know, speaking of money, I don't know how many people saw this, but the remainder of the NCAA gender equity report was released on Tuesday night. And nothing was very surprising, as expected. The NCAA found that they spend more money on and devote more money and time to men's sports championships by a lot of money. As I said, nothing was shocking here that was specific to softball, though. The NCAA spent $16 million on the D1 baseball championships in 2019, compared to $6.3 million in softball. So yeah, that's more than double. And broken down per athlete, it was 9,281 per baseball player compared to 4,970 per softball player. Everyone in the, you know, knew this. We saw the complaints with the basketball championships and softball and volleyball last year with women. And the committee has some suggestions for how to rectify this all in sports. Here's hoping it finally happens. I think that's actually, they're being held more accountable. So I'm hoping that we'll see some changes. We already kind of have with softball in terms of, you know, time, extending the series longer, but definitely need to realize that the women can make money on their own. They don't have to be clumped together in one big package. So I'm hoping that some of these changes will actually come and won't take 17,000 years like some NCAA stuff usually does. But that was just, it's good to have some hard numbers to show the NCAA, you know, you can't just keep hiding. We have the numbers now. So that was the equity report that was released Tuesday night. Anyone that hasn't, I check it out and read the whole thing. It's very, again, not surprising, but just kind of like, now you got some ammo to back up all those arguments.
Yeah, and numbers don't lie. Well, correct numbers don't lie. So I think looking at what is spent on the men's versus the women. Obviously, it's where we're going to start. And at the end of the day, we hope the NCAA takes a look at it. And I'm just happy that maybe we won't have to be there till 2 o'clock in the morning covering games at the World Series. That's number one.
I'm sure the weather will still make us find some way to be, you know, there's a cutoff time, but somehow, some way that always seems to still happen. But yeah, at least there'll be less of a chance, less of it. So we can actually like feel like we're writing with like brains that function.
So that's, I mean, lots of news this week. And, you know.
Yeah, well, we got one more big news item. We almost, it's, you know, it's a little later, but Heather Tarr named the USA softball head coach.
Let's give a round of applause, Heather Tarr. And that was announced earlier this week. She will now be heading up Team USA, the women's national team. Tarr's done a phenomenal job at Washington and with Team USA. Excited to see what she does now taking the reins from Ken Erickson.
Yeah, sixth female to be the head coach in the women's national team history. So a long line, and it's a good one. So we're hoping that she has success. Yeah, it's kind of, I was kind of thinking that would be the way they would go. She's been on the, obviously the coaching staffs and stuff, and she's very, you know, and she's already saying, she's already pushing for stuff, you know, like you can see it out there, like, which is great. So we need someone like that. And hopefully, fingers crossed, Olympics in LA, they'll get, you know, back in the Olympics, won't be in this cycle, but the next one. So let's hope for that.
Yeah. Looking forward to the 2028 Olympics, like you said, in LA. And, you know, Heather Tarr up in Washington, we see her all over Twitter too, always fighting for equal rights and hopefully can bring some change there and a little bit of that USA softball culture, a new look for them moving forward. And we had actually more big news. We signed Alex Sirocco from Michigan for the D1 Players Society this week as well. Super excited about that. So want to welcome Alex to the team, and we'll be signing some more athletes as the weeks come forward, and just really excited about this initiative.
Yeah, the Michigan pitcher, man. Michigan pitchers. If we got to have a deal per strikeout with her, maybe, and we'll probably get some good money there with that. Yeah. Anyone, yeah. And I encourage everyone that needs to know more about that. And we're going to sign up more players. So it's great. It really gives them a good platform. And anyone that wants to invest in the sport, check out the players that we sign so you can help promote them and help get their name out there and further their careers.
So the applications for the D1 Players Society will be up until October 31st. So there's still some time for current D1 athletes to apply to the D1 Players Society. It's on the website, on our Instagram, in the actual profile. You can go click straight to the entry form. So just head on over to Instagram or the website, d1softball.com. Well, we've had loads of news. I can't believe it. We've got all kinds of big news. But what I want to do is for you, Reed, to introduce our guest of the week, who maybe might be my favorite guest we've had thus far. It's up there. The conversation that we had with our guest, I was rolling, belly laughing. So Reed, who do we got this week?
Yes, we have none other than Louisiana head coach Jerry Glasgow. And as you said, this interview was highly entertaining, got good softball stuff, but probably the first one we've had barrel racing mentioned, quail hunting, bird dogs, even a little Mexico action there with some of the contraband that probably shouldn't be talked about too much. But Jerry Glasgow's life story is amazing. And what he tells us about his softball team is be good stuff for softball too. Just an enjoyable interview. So we don't want to keep it going any longer. We want everyone to be able to listen to it. So let's check out our interview with Jerry Glasgow, Louisiana softball head coach. Now joined on the podcast by Louisiana softball head coach Jerry Glasgow. Glasgow's entering his fifth season with the Raging Cajuns. He's led the program to at least 40 wins and an NCAA appearance in every season he's been at the helm. Last season, Louisiana captured the Sun Belt regular season and tournament title. Jerry, thank you so much for joining us today. We're right in the midst of fall ball right now. How is fall going for the Raging Cajuns?
Well, Friday will be the end of our third week of fall team time, the six-week, 45-day window. So we'll be exactly halfway, and we're just a couple days shy of halfway. And so, You know, it's a really difficult fall for me to read the team because we're going to be freshman based, which is really exciting and something I've been like really excited and looking forward to for the last 4 years. But when I took the job in 2018, the first thing I did was went out and the first unrecruited class, the first class that wasn't already picked over was that freshman class in 2021 graduates and then the 2022 eighth graders. So those kids finally got on campus this fall. And, you know, we've got an outstanding group of freshmen. On the other hand, you know, when freshmen get to college, you know, they're a long way from where you want them to be to be able to compete in that top 25 range. And so it's basically been 4 years since I've worked with a freshman team and developed freshmen. So it's testing my patience some. It's exciting to me. Fear is a great motivator. When I look at how bad we are in some areas of the game, it scares me a little bit that, you know, we have a lot of work to do. And then, you know, to keep the program at the level that we want it to stay at, it'll motivate you, that fear will, when you realize reality is we got a long way to go. And so it's been a very exciting fall. And I feel like that we're, with all that said, we're right on pace to be where we want to be in February or March.
On that note, being a young team, I mean, I know since you've gotten there, you've kind of relied on a lot of transfers to come there just to kind of, we talked in the past, you know, some of its necessity. Is that still going to be a strategy to develop your team, or is that going to be maybe less reliant on that now that you have these classes coming in that you can develop on your own?
Yeah, no, I want freshmen. I mean, I think that my strength as a coach is developing the hitting and the young kids in a program. It's just, you've got to have young, if you want to compete with, you know, the top SEC schools and the top 25, like we've been trying to do and have to do here. You know, you have to get talented athletes. And that was we were able to get talented athletes to transfer portal. And now in the 21 class, we've got some extremely talented freshman kids to develop. We were able to sneak in Taylor Roman in 2019, who actually was already committed to the Raging Cajun program. When I got here, I'd also recruited her to A&M. So I had a relationship with her where we were able to continue and keep her in the fold and sign her. So we had a really talented freshman there. And then last year, Sophie Piscos, we were able to get out of the Fury organization. She's from up where I'm from in Illinois, just about an hour and a half south of my hometown. And we were able to really sneak in a great 2020 recruit there. And then this 2021 class, I think we had 11 kids in the top 100, really talented. So that was kind of just a necessity to go to the transfer portal. Definitely not the ideal situation. I think the ideal situation is always going to be to get young, talented athletes and have them in your program 4 years. But, you know, we were able to keep the winning tradition here. We were able to stay competitive. We were able to stay atop the Sun Belt at a very difficult time in a transition period for our program. And now I think you can see us be a lot more stable and a lot more consistent over the next 5 years.
And Jerry, you've been known for your ability to develop offense and coach offense. How did that come about? Where did that specialty in your career, you know, matriculate from?
Yeah, you know, probably I would give credit to Lou at Georgia. I think, you know, I went in, I was a travel ball coach and obviously, you know, I'd worked with a lot of hitters in my travel ball program and in my own daughters. But the reality is, you know, once I got to Georgia, Lou was a very demanding head coach, task-oriented, detail-oriented. And I think the biggest favor that anyone ever did for me in my coaching career was her not just saying, you know, but tell the hitters. One time I told Megan Wiggins my first year that I'd probably been at Georgia 2 weeks, and she asked me why, and I said, because I said so, that's why. And Lou called me in the office later that day and said, look, that's not the answer I want my athletes to have. I want my athletes to be empowered. I want them, when they ask why, I want you to be able to tell them why. And you saying, because you told them, that's not getting that done. Educate them. And, you know, she challenged, like, I said, okay, well, suggestions, you know, like, how do I get better at communicating? She said, well, use film, because your eyes never lie. Their eyes will see what your eyes see. So use film to explain what you're wanting to achieve. And so I dug in. I mean, I'm a hunter, you know, and I started digging into film, and within probably 6 months, I've had like 4,000 clips stored on my computer, because it was like obsessive. And, you know, that was a huge turning point in my career as far as coaching. And in those 6 years that I was at Georgia, Lou worked with her hitters just as much as I did. And she worked with her pitchers just as much as any pitching coach. She was a hands-on coach, and her slogan was always, if you see it, you own it. If I saw something with the outfield, I owned it. I was supposed to go out there and fix it. And if I saw something at first base on defense, go tell them what you want, as long as it was correct, you know. And so I'd give her the credit for that. I mean, I think she's a mentor and a great, her personality was very, very, very detailed and task-oriented. And that helped me a lot as a coach.
Jerry, you know, your family's known throughout softball, a lot of development in that family. How did you get to softball through your daughters, or how did you enter the softball space at the start?
Yeah, strictly because of my daughters. I love sports. I always, as a child, and then as a young man, I was a guy that played slow pitch softball Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night, all weekend long, you know, obsessed with sports. In the wintertime is basketball, going everywhere for basketball. And so I love sports. And then when my oldest daughter got up about 6-7 years old, that was the common denominator. I mean, she liked softball, I like softball, and horses. I wanted my daughters to be barrel racers. I wanted to ride quarter horses, you know, and run barrels. And that was what I wanted as a father. And then behind that was softball and basketball. And anyway, Tara really liked the softball and the basketball side. And she was, when she got to be about 12, she's like, Dad, I want to give up the horses and focus on softball. And by that time, Aaron was 7. They were 5 years apart. And so that was really, I would be gone 4 months a year with my job running a hunting resort in Mexico. When I would come home, we just played softball all the time. And I wanted my kids to be good. I was, you know, that competitive dad, probably living through my kids way more than I should have been at times. But, you know, we spent a lot of time on the ball field.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I saw you obviously graduated the degree in agricultural economics from Illinois.
Yeah.
Running a hunting resort. Like, I did not know that was that what you think you're going to do with your life? Or when you got that degree, what was your career path that you thought you might take?
Yeah, well, I got my degree in agri-economics. My dad was a farmer in Southern Illinois in the Mississippi River Bottoms. And so the plan was go back home, you know, help dad on the family farm. But I always loved to hunt. And so I always had bird dogs from the time I was in high school. And I was very interested in field trials. And so part of working on the farm in 1980 was like, you know, my salary was $1,000 a month. I'd make $12,000 a year on a family farm. And quickly learned I could go to Texas and guide quail hunts and make $10,000-$12,000 in the wintertime. And then in 1986, I graduated from college in 1980. At 26 years old, I went down to Mexico on a trip down there and realized the opportunity was in Mexico to take, you know, people hunting and on bobwhite quail in Mexico with dogs. And I ended up contracting dog handlers to different lodges and taking, you know, 50, 60 bird dogs every winter from Illinois to Mexico and spend a winter down there. You know, my wife, we got married, we dated since high school. And so she was used to me being gone every winter. And so being gone 4 months a year, when I would come home in February, that was the best way to reconnect with my young kids and something we'd just spend lots and lots of time together.
That's an awesome story, the bonding. And then if you gave up all that hunting and stuff, you know that softball meant a lot to you and the bond was strong.
Yeah, well, that's what happened. I mean, Lou started offering me a job at Georgia, I think in 2003 or 2004. We won the national championship in gold, in 18 gold in 2004. Casey Carroll, my pitcher, had already played 1 year at Georgia at that point. That was back when you could go to college and play a year. You know, I think she started recruiting Casey in 2002. And then behind Casey Carroll was Kristen Snocky, the shortstop on Georgia's first World Series team. And then, of course, Alisa Goler, seven-time All-American at Georgia, played for Southern Force. I coached Alisa 4 years in Southern Force and 3 years at University of Georgia. And there was other players, but that was Lou and I's. That's how she got to know me. I got to know her. And, of course, she played softball at Western Illinois University. A lot of people don't know that. But she was from that area, so she understood Illinois, and she thought it was unique that I could find that kind of athletes and put together that kind of a softball team with kids from those little small towns in Southern Illinois. And so she would say, come be my recruiting coordinator at Georgia. And, I'd say, well, I like softball, but I love hunting in Mexico, so that's not going to happen. But the drug war started in 2008. And it changed everything, where it was no longer safe to take the clientele that I was taking from very wealthy American CEOs and doctors and lawyers. And I wasn't able to do that. So I called Lou and I said, look, I'm going to shut my hunting camp down. If you want a recruiting coordinator, I'm available. And that's how it started. I called her in February of 2008. She had me come down in March. And I met with the AD and they told me start July 1. And so I went from fall of 2007 coaching junior high softball. That was Jerry Ann's eighth grade year at Johnson City, Illinois. And in the fall of 2008, I was coaching Alisa Goler, Megan Wiggins, Taylor Slopey, their sophomore year at University of Georgia in the SEC. You think about Lou and the insight that she had to take that gamble, to hire a bird dog guy, a dog trainer, bird dog handler from Illinois that was coaching junior high softball, and put him in charge of kids in the SEC program, and immediately turned the recruiting over to me. Like, she was awesome. Like, she was hands-on about pitching. She was hands-on about hitting. But recruiting, she was like, give me good athletes. Give me great athletes. And by that time, she and I had spent enough time, we had communicated so much over the 2002 to 2008 time period. We thought we knew exactly how each other thought as far as speed, talent, what it took to win softball games, and the different combinations you could use by getting extremely fast players or extremely powerful hitters. And you could win with speed or you could win with offensive power. And so she trusted me on that level, which was really good. And then to be able to go straight in for travel ball, of course, the travel ball coaches were awesome to work with. They were in my back pocket, and I'll always be indebted to that group of that sector of softball, because they really helped me in my time at Georgia on the recruiting part, and still do today.
I know you got tons of time, and you're working out all your fall ball, plans and all the numbers you got. And we see there's a big board behind you with lineups and everything. So we won't keep you much longer, but on that note, we've seen the evolution of softball over the years, and from an offensive perspective, what are the biggest changes that you've seen since you entered college into now?
The tremendous improvement in hitting. I mean, the hitting has just the mechanical ability of hitters today compared to 2008. It's no comparison. And then if you go back, if you look at film from 1994, 1996, the advancement in the hitting and the technique of hitters is amazing. And it's done by, I think there's a lot of reason, but nothing is as important as film and the ability of, we've gone from 16 frame per second video to 480 frame to 1,000 frames. Coaches have so much more information on how to teach what actually happens in the swing or in the pitch. Because it's not just in hitting, it's also in pitching, it's also in defense. But I think the one glaring thing is offense is just so much improved. And then there's so many more great hitting coaches now out there that, good hitting programs and coaches able to communicate with the players so many more ways than there was available 10, 15 years ago. That's to me the thing. We went from seeing 2-1, 3-2 games, which were really exciting to watch. Now you're seeing teams be up 8-2 and come and lose, or I think there was a game last year where it ended up like 14-13, and you're seeing scores that you just never imagined, even with quality pitching. And that's I think the biggest change in the game that I see.
Yeah, for sure. And it's forced the teams to have a lot bigger pitching staffs too, as we've seen. You got to have a lot of different variety there. We'll leave you on this. I know nationally, we've seen the explosion of softball coverage, you know, in the World Series, but locally there, you guys have always been really well covered. And we kind of talked about this a little bit off air. Can you tell people or listeners that may not, you know, tune in on a daily basis, just how well covered that program is in Louisiana and how the local folks really, you know, cling to what you guys are doing and how many like radio and newspapers are at all your press conferences every day?
Yeah, you know, Louisiana Raging Cajun softball is it's a thing, and it's a fun thing, and it's really important that we maintain the program that we have, which is based on the fans. And so examples of that people find unusual, if you come to any of our practices, you come to our practice today, there are going to be fans in the stands watching practice. There's people that come every day. If we have a scrimmage on the weekends, you know, you might have 25 people, you might have 200 people. They just love their softball and then they want information. So, you know, we have people doing podcasts on our softball program. You have AM radio covering it on talk shows. You have FM radio covering it on talk shows during season. You have the Raging Cajun or Inside Louisiana softball radio show every Monday night where you review everything that happened on the weekend. And there's just a lot of interest in our program, which is really good. I think it should be a model for how softball programs should be run. And it's just because of the great history and the great coaches that were here before I got here. It's just, it's a winning tradition. I think we've won 40 games or more, like 22 straight years, Matt. 22 years that we've won 40 games. You think about that. We've been in every single NCAA Division I tournament since the turn of the century, along with like 9 schools. But those 9 schools are like UCLA, Oklahoma, Arizona, and then you got Louisiana. So we've got a really great tradition here, and the support that we get from our fan base it's incredible.
Yeah, that's a coverage like most football programs. And that's, like you said, that would be a great model because I think the appetite's there. And having coaches like you that are very well spoken and very good with the media, that definitely helps too, because obviously a storyteller. And we appreciate you making time because we know how busy you are. And we can see it, you know, our listeners can't see it, but behind you, there's all kinds of numbers and boards and pins and lineups all behind Jerry right there. So we probably should let you get back to that. But we do appreciate you joining the D1 Softball Podcast, and we'd love to have you on again, because honestly, I have like probably 40 more questions I have listed here, but you have hours in the day that are better spent than sitting with us for so long.
You know, nothing's more important than providing information for softball fans. If we want to grow our sport, we have to be available to the fans in our sport, and we have to, you know, invest in them with information, with our openness and transparency. And, you know, we've got a lot to work on the field, and then, you know, you got to do your work off the field. So I'm really appreciative of you taking time to express interest in our program, to give us visibility, and it's nice to be able to get information out to our fans and to the public.
Well, we'll definitely have you back, Jerry. Thank you so much. You're always so fun to speak with, and I know we'll be talking many times in the future. So thank you for joining us.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate you.
You know, Ree, he is just a pleasure to speak with. Jerry Glasgow, head coach, Louisiana. I could talk about barrel racing and anything and everything in between. I mean, it's like, you start peeling back the onion and then you're thinking, oh my gosh, there's all these different layers. Who would have thought? I mean, he's traveling back and forth from Mexico with bird dogs and it was insane.
Yeah, I honestly, like, I think we could have talked to him for 3 hours and still not even felt like, and he probably would have, in knowing Jerry, he would have stayed on, his SID would have been pulling him out because he's just that kind of guy. And, you know, it was fascinating learning too about, I mean, we see it, how they're covered down there and just have their own coaches show for softball, which is unheard of for a lot of places. So yeah, I feel like that Jerry Glasgow's could be like a 7-part series where we learn everything about his life and then hit softball. So that was one of the most enjoyable ones we've had for me, just because of the range and because of his personality, just a really, really honest, good, and really pro softball guy. I always love talking to Jerry.
Yeah, a pleasure to speak with Jerry. And You know, our friends over at Out of the Box, actually Gray Robertson, sent me a question regarding Jerry's schedule. We didn't get to ask him to it, but if you take a look at Louisiana's schedule next year, they go from April 12th to April 25th, and they are on the road 9 games in a row. They're on the road. It's an insane schedule. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, we didn't get to ask Jerry, but what a schedule to have in the middle of the season.
Yeah, I honestly, it's kind of par for the course for that team and Jerry. They go anywhere. They want some of those, you know, big, whenever they don't really have a choice. If they want to schedule against bigger programs and not in the sun, you know, in their conference, they have to kind of schedule out a conference. And he knows that most people don't want to come to Louisiana to play. Obviously, it's a hard place to play, as we've seen with, you know, LSU and them usually go back and forth, but it's a tough place to play. So I don't think they really have a choice in a lot of means. And so I see the games are really tight scheduled. I know that they're within, like, you know, driving distance of each other, a lot of them, but not really surprised. It's a grind, but I think they really don't have that many options if they really want to get in those tough games.
Those road games, I think, are going to be really important for them. So they're at South Alabama for a 3-game series. They're at St. Louis. Then they go to Illinois, Indiana, and then finish with App State, and then come home and play Corpus Christi. So that's from the 14th of April all the way to the 25th. So take a look at Louisiana's schedule. I think that's it for episode 4, I believe. Are we in episode 4 now?
Season 2. I don't know. They just are still to roll together. I believe so. Yeah. I don't even, you know, I just every week, that's all I care. I don't count the weeks. I just know every week we're dropping an episode because there's always softball to talk about. And season 2 is going to be a long one because we're going to keep going through the actual season. We're just starting in fall. We're just getting warmed up with fall. So
getting warmed up. Well, that's it for the D1 Softball Podcast, season 2, episode 4. Thank you all for joining. Head on over to d1softball.com. Subscribe if you're not already a subscriber. We've got loads of fall reports up. We've got almost 16, 17. We'll be at 16, 17 end of the week up. So we're climbing and trying. We're going to hit every Power 5 team possible. And then we've got loads of mid-majors up there as well. So just really excited to see all those teams be highlighted and the players get the recognition they deserve. Ree, have a great week. Any final thoughts?
No, and just with you, Rita, I mean, I'm learning tons of those fall reports, a lot of inside info. If you're a fan of softball, I mean, I'm learning stuff left and right. And I know I have about 6 or 7 in the bank of interviews that I got to transcribe and get up there. And I'm excited for them because there's some cool information. So yeah, d1softball.com, subscribe. The only way we can do those reports is if we get subscribers. So I encourage everyone to tell your grandmother, you know, get a Christmas present, you know, I don't know, everything. Just subscribe. It's a good, you know, the supply chain issues, you can always just get a subscription. It's guaranteed to be there. Like, there's not going to have to, Amazon's not going to bring it. So d1softball.com.
Guaranteed to be in your inbox. I love it, Ree.
Start early. Start buying early. Give the gift of softball coverage.
All right. Well, I'm your host, Tara Henry, with Ree Henry Podkey. We'll see you next week.